Okay, our next panel deals with linking small farms, businesses, and community farms, gardens to the local, national, and global markets to ensure sustainable food and nutrition security and rural development. Our first speaker is Timothy Johns, professor of the School of Dietetics and Human Nutrition at McGill University and a research fellow at Biversity International in Italy. Tim.
I'm changing over this. What is it? Okay. Good afternoon. Biodiversity International is one of the constituent centers of the Consultative Group on International Agricultural Research, the CGIAR. And the perspective that I'm giving today is, I think, very much informed by experiences in working with Biodiversity. That picture that you see on the top there is actually from a stained glass, from one of several stained glasses, which are in the recently renovated Mercado Central in Sao Paulo, which is a wonderful place. If you're interested in fruits, tropical fruits specifically, it's just a treasure. I show you this. I was recently in Brazil at a first food, National Food Service Congress, where the symposium I was involved with was a specific focus on biodiversity for nutrition and health. I think Brazil is a very interesting country in many ways. It's certainly a country of contrast, but if we look at really the issue around small-scale farmers, it breaks down into two really realities. One is in developed countries like Canada and the U.S., but and then there is a developing country experience, which I'm really going to focus on here this afternoon. Brazil embraces both of those realities. It's a country that certainly in policy and on a paper has found a ways to look at and find a balance between global and local food systems, between large intensified production and small-scale agriculture. It's by no means perfect, but they're trying. Just to give you a sense, so a recent statistics they released about 6 weeks ago on the contribution of small-scale farming. These are typically farms that are, I think, less than 26 hectares. They produce 38% of the agricultural value in the country, and that includes all the soybeans and sugarcane and all the other stuff that Brazil is famous for. They do that on 25.4% of the agricultural land, so clearly a more sustainable system than the large-scale system. In terms of the majority of the population, the large majority of poor subsistence people, then this sector employs over 75% of the workers in the sector. In its contribution to health, you can see some of those numbers there, and some of the major high-quality foods they produce in the majority. You can also make a link here with international markets, things like Brazil nuts, coffee, certainly, you know, much of that, large percents of that are produced by small-scale farmers. Brazil is also a global leader in building linkages between biodiversity, nutrition, and health. They spearheaded this cross-cutting initiative that was accepted by the Conference of Parties of the CBD in 2006, and they are leaders in implementing this with a global environmental facility contribution. Doing that, and this back to this issue of convergence, they have bringing together within their ministries of environment, health, is led by the Ministry of Medio Ambiente, which is environment, linking agriculture, health, education, finance, and several others. This is really looking at small-scale farmers and linking them with local markets from the perspective that I think is more familiar to most of people here or the discussion we've had. In developed countries, it's really driven by different things than it is in developing countries. And I think it's first and foremost delivered by consumer values, by demand, by values related to health, to social aspects, in terms of quality of farm life, of solidarity with local community, and driven by environmental concerns as well. There are concerns about health in relation to quality, freshness, culinary, both perceived and real, not necessarily all real. And this sector develops it, I think, in ways that I think most of us are increasingly becoming familiar. It's part of our current reality. the developing country, all of those things, they do have relevance in a developing country context. And in some ways, the space that's being created for local agriculture in our part of the world actually carries weight internationally, and I think is at least helpful in convincing people of the relevance. But certainly the starting place and the reality is a really different issue. It's developing countries are really issues. The fundamental one is poverty. Most Gulf-Sudanese farmers are subsistence farmers, suffering malnutrition problems. Issues of environmental change and long-term resilience are important. And in these contexts, there is important cultural, social cultural realities that exist. Poverty is certainly the first and foremost the producers who are mostly poor. But the price of food determines what consumers, increasingly urban consumers, can afford. The malnutrition is certainly in both of those areas. The malnutrition is the classic deficiency that nutritionists seem to focus on in international situation. But as we know, it's increasingly obesity and diabetes, etc. Environmental issues may now always be part of this discussion, but I believe that in terms of putting these pieces together, they're absolutely essential. Certainly, food security in any context is not just food security for today or for tomorrow, but real food security is sustainable long-term security. Within that discussion, then, biodiversity conservation is certainly a fundamental issue. Most of our debate has been focused now around the issues of climate change, why is climate change so absolutely threatening? Well, certainly loss of biodiversity is a flip side of that coin. And then general ecosystem integrity is important. In developing countries, there are social cultural factors that we may not consider as fully as we do in our own environment. Local food systems are typically traditional food systems. They're based on local knowledge. There's a tremendous wealth in that is not appreciated. Small-scale farmers and subsistence farmers are by nature risk averse. Unless you're mediating risk, then they're not likely to participate. Equally, they do not give up like any of us do, or their identity, their social cultural integrity. All of these things are within the system before one starts. Looking at it as a positive of how we, if we're looking for positive change, if we're wanting to influence the demand, then certainly consumer behavior, motivation are particularly important, and social cultural factors are something that can be used constructively. The FAO definition of food security, which is really what I think relates to developing countries, contains some words I think are obvious, but want to really underline these words, that it's safe. It's not just enough food, but it's safe and nutritious food, and also meeting food preferences, which may not always be appreciated. Brazil, which I say is very progressive on paper at least, goes even further in this regard, and probably could have written the whole international definition. Those red words are really respecting cultural diversity, as well as the environmental, cultural, economic, and social sustainability. Small-scale farmers, certainly in developing countries, are the keystones for food and nutrition security. They are, in the best instance, and maybe not always because of constraints, they are more productive than large farms. they do that because they employ family labor, which is very inexpensive, and they are much better at managing small microenvironments compared to commercial agriculture, which plants a uniform system across a wide range of habitats. In Africa, they account for 90% of the agriculture production. Certainly, in that system, this is subsistence, and it's not profitable in the same way we might look through the lens we might look at agriculture in other contexts. The majority of these people are poor. They are often, these small-scale farms are female-headed, who are typically represented I think we're looking at the nutrition and health of the most vulnerable population, women and children, then they are the obvious target group. These are environments, particularly in Africa, that are vulnerable to climate change. but they are potentially resilient. There are, and I want to demonstrate some of the importance of biodiversity in that regard. Small-scale farmers are inherent stewards of agricultural biodiversity, and I think it's increasingly recognized by policymakers in the national arena that this is probably the single most greatest untapped potential for increasing productivity worldwide. In terms of diversity, I just make just a sort of a general statement that diversity of vegetables, fruits, legumes, cereals, and animal-source foods are essential for subsistence and health in traditional systems, and they have tremendous potential for maintaining health in the current context and for development, in some cases, into products that could be distributed globally. Quinoa, which is up there in the middle, is one that certainly has an international market. It's not really the focus of my talk, but I think it's important to recognize that that's an opportunity. This extending the environmental discussion a little further, the reality of this picture is in relation to serious drought that is in East Africa, which we are currently experiencing, attributed, some people say, to climate change. That's a very idyllic sort of view of drought that you see there. You don't see the dead animals or the misery on people's face. It doesn't look all that bad. These are areas that in the current context, when people are growing for markets, mostly what they're growing is maize. In this current year, that crop has completely failed. That's a zero production crop. Interestingly, though, and trying to look at examining the resilience that's in these systems, when I was there in July, it was very apparent that other families that were growing a different suite of crops, a suite of more traditional crops, which I'm not going to take the time to name to you, but the five of them there, they were growing theirs, life was the same as always. There was no sign of a drought whatsoever. So there's a tremendous inherent resilience in this system. There are models for adaptation that we'll increasingly lean on as things move forward. What are the constraints on increasing the production and profitability of smallholder farmers? Certainly, what they typically do focus on when they're engaged in both subsistence and limited market activity is staple foods, rice and maize, etc. They can be productive, but they're not profitable. They don't gain much in that. They can't break out of that poverty cycle. You certainly don't generate capital in that situation. In sub-Saharan Africa, very much the yields are far from optimal. People lack the basic capital to move into another segment of that could be profit generating. And they certainly lack the skills in which to engage in a more market type of activity. And in that situation, in any income input costs, even most minimal things like fertilizer and seeds are a constraint. I think maybe more important, or most important from our discussion, is the limited market opportunities that people do have. In reality, how little of it translates into markets. There is certainly exclusion of both small-scale suppliers and the products of biodiversity from markets through demand or desire for quality and demand for quality and necessary for products to be produced in sufficient scale. How to overcome that, I think, is really where the focus needs to be in terms of achieving the potential that this sector holds. There is, in fact, quite a bit of farmer reticence as well. Certainly, people who are risk averse may not be well advised to branch out into some new initiative when that may fail, when the prices may drop, or the crops, or the climate may wipe that out. Or it may be just something that socially, culturally, that just doesn't feel comfortable to them. Thinking about what are the prerequisites for rejuvenation of smallholder agriculture, I don't think this is in any way complete. My thoughts on this have expanded just sitting here this morning. But certainly, let me point out a few key things. First of all, I think it's important to build on the inherent strength of these systems. These are opportunities that are based on biodiversity, on traditional knowledge, on the intelligence and skills of the farmers themselves. Certainly, in that regard, the opportunity is not to impose some alien system, but to build partnerships and work in a participatory way with small farmers. There certainly needs to be direct investment in this sector. How that should be done, I think, is an important question. But certainly, where it needs to go is technology transfer, building of infrastructure, just roads, cold chains, various types of things are lacking. So, if you're focused on fresh fruits and vegetables, particularly, the difficulties are high. We certainly need to develop that through the markets and the supply chain, and that certainly demands research. Certainly, the three prerequisites, I think, for this to succeed is certainly having the market work effectively, creating the demand so it works. It's not a change that is in a development that's likely to happen without social subsidies, particularly if we're really looking at it from its environmental contribution, the importance of preservation of traditional systems, of environments, microenvironments, or local environments, and biodiversity, or as buffers of rainforest, et cetera, against climate change, then that those environmental services have to be recognized and have to be rewarded. Certainly, none of those things can happen without some form of policy. Certainly, guidelines towards market are important, but also some form of policy and regulation is also important. There are examples where this does work. I mean, the Brazil example that I gave you from the beginning. The other two pictures that you see here in the upper left and the bottom right is an example of a very successful relationship between small-scale farmers in Kenya that has developed over the last, since 2003. Local farmers producing traditional African vegetables that are very highly desirable and from a cultural point of view, nutritionally very important. And with the proper support and infrastructure and organizational assistance, those farmers are now linked with the major supermarket chains in the city of Nairobi. So there is a potential, certainly, and good examples for success. Thank you.